Blog Talk Radio.
That all things would work together for good. Truck companies on crack and the casinos on crack, so everybody talking about money. Big money, little money, no money, but some money. Tonight, I want to, this is barber class night. I want to be very clear with what's going on over in the Middle East. Wars and rumors of wars. And we're getting ready for another hurricane to come. Already we had an earthquake this evening in California, Sacramento, two earthquakes. I said the earlier part, back-to-back storms, back-to-back floods. I said man will forget his connection with God. I want to tell you, don't you forget your connection with God. I was talking to a young lady earlier. I said, where's your seed? Oh, I ain't got no money. She had just went down and bought a new car. Don't know how she's going to pay for it. If you got a need, you plant a seed. When you plant that seed in the name of the Almighty God, he's going to give you what you want and what you need. I want to talk about when Dr. Martin Luther King came to Chicago and we had the Blackstone Rangers, we had the Disciples, the Latin Kin, and all the teen nations hooked up with Dr. King. And Dr. King told them young boys, if y'all stick with me, I'm going to make sure things happen good for you. Dr. King meaned that, but the people that was over Dr. King had lied. Lots of the boys went to jail. Some of them still in jail as I speak today. But we found out that you cannot hold a good man, a good woman down. Now, all those people over in Egypt, they opened the door to let transportation come. But when you deal with the violence, somebody got the somebody responsible for all this killing that's going on in America. Now, you can stand back on the sidelines and say, it ain't me. Prayer changes things. Have you asked God tonight to keep you all night long? People are dying. They're flying. They're dying. Young and old. Rich and poor. But Arkansas, Mississippi, Louisiana, and one of the ladies down in Arkansas told the Chinese, carry your project back to China. Don't bring it here in Arkansas to try to steal the land energy. There's so much going on that we have to stay focused on what's happening. Body, mind, soul, and spirit. And once you receive body, mind, soul, and spirit, every door closed will open up and work for you. Now, this is Dr. King telling the young men that things gonna get better. When Washington was turning the key, they were trying to get adult education, and they were trying to get job, and wasn't no job.
One night in our regular weekly mass meeting by some angry young men of our movement, I went home that night with an ugly feeling. Selfishly, I thought of my sufferings and sacrifices over the last 12 years. Why would they put one so close to them? But as I lay awake thinking, I finally came to myself, and I could not for the life of me have less in patience and understanding for those young men. For 12 years, I and others like me had held out radiant promises of progress. I had preached to them about my dream. I had lectured to them about the not too distant day when they would have freedom all here now. I had urged them to have faith in America and in white society. Their hopes had soared. They were now booing me because they felt that we weren't able to deliver on our promises. They were booing because we had urged them to have faith in people who had too often proved to be unfaithful. They were now hostile because they were watching the dream that they had so readily accepted turn into a frustrating nightmare. This situation is all the more ominous in view of the rising expectations of men the world over. The deep rumblings that we hear today, the rumbling of discontent, is the thunder of disinherited masses rising from dungeons of oppression to the bright hills of freedom. All over the world, like a fever, freedom is spreading in the widest liberation movement in history. The great masses of people are determined to end the exploitation of our races and lands. In one majestic chorus, they are singing in the words of our freedom song, ain't gonna let nobody turn us around. So the collision course is set. The people cry for freedom, and the Congress attempts to legislate repression. Millions, yes, billions, are appropriated for mass murder. But the most meager pittance of foreign aid for international development is crushed in the surge of reaction. Unemployment rages at a major depression level in the black ghettos. bipartisan response is an anti-riot bill rather than a serious poverty program. The modest proposals for Mother City's rent supplement and rat control, pitiful as they were to begin with, get caught in the maze of congressional inaction. And I submit to you tonight that a Congress that proves to be more anti-Negro than anti-rat needs to be dismissed. Our legislative assemblies have adopted Nero as their patron saint and are bent on fiddling while our cities burn. Even when the people persist and in the face of great obstacles develop indigenous leadership and self-help approaches to their problems, and finally tread the forest of bureaucracy to obtain existing government funds, the corrupt political order seeks to crush even this beginning of hope. The case of CDGM in Mississippi is the most publicized example, but it is a story repeated many times across our nation. Our own experience here in Chicago is especially painfully present. After an enthusiastic approval by HEW's Department of Adult Education, SCLC began an adult literacy project to aid 1,000 young men and women who have been pushed out of overcrowded ghetto schools in obtaining basically literacy skills prerequisite to receiving jobs. We had an agreement with A&P stores for 750 jobs through SCLC's job program, Operation Breadbasket, and had recruited over 500 pupils the first week. At that point, Congressman Kuchinski and the Daily Machine intervened and demanded that Washington cut off our funds or channel them through the machine-controlled poverty program in Chicago. Now we have no problem with administrative supervision, but we do have a desire to be independent of machine control and the Democratic Party patronage network. But this desire for a politically independent approach to the needs of our brothers, our funds are being stopped as of September 15th, and a very meaningful program discontinued. Yes, the hour is dark. Evil comes forth in the guise of good. It is a time of double talk when men in high places have a high blood pressure of deceptive rhetoric and an anemia of concrete performance. We cry out against welfare handouts to the poor, but generously approve an oil depletion allowance to make the rich richer. 6 Mississippi plantations receive more than $1 million a year not to plant cotton, but no provision is made to feed the government.
This is Dr. King talking about the farmers in Mississippi can't get government funds. Well, right now I want to go to Washington talk about the vote that's going on in Washington, killing across the country, police in marching up in New York. We're still going through these kind of things. Money is the issue. Chrysler, Ford, and General Motors don't want to pay the people. So we are talking from Atlanta, also up to Long Island, New York. So we're going to be talking to those people that
Speaker of the House?
He is. Keith Jeffries certainly could become the Speaker, and I
tied to Israel and Ukraine. Lawmakers also talking about strengthening the southern border. They have to figure out how to fund the government with another potential shutdown a month away. Can this pass Congress even under the temporary fix of the Speaker Pro Tem? I know this is the lightning round, but give me a thunder storm.
I'll tell you the answer is yes, because it's reasonable and necessary. Those are the two key terms. And we haven't had it tested. It could be subject to lawsuits, so it could retroactively be undone. But it can happen, it should happen, and I'd like to see McHenry step up and take that power in Section 8B3A of the Rules of the House.
Final question before I let you go. If Congress can change your own, and we hear so much talk about it is written in the Constitution, why can't that happen to the Second Amendment?
Yeah, it depends on which rules and how to change that. You can change the Second Amendment, but the problem is how many of the states you need to agree on it. It's a much lower threshold to change the rules of the House. It's about the voting. It's kind of like if we have 10 friends that need to go, and we say 5 of them get to make the decision for dinner, it's much easier than we say we need unanimous consent. The problem is how many people have to vote.
I want you in my corner to phone a friend on the next round of Jeopardy. Andrew Lieb, our constitutional attorney. Thanks for being with us tonight. And by the way, you can get the latest updates on all today's stories just by following Scripps News on X, on Instagram, on Facebook, on TikTok, and on Threads. Still ahead, New York City Mayor Eric Adams has a new message for incoming asylum seekers. Your shelter stay is limited. Axel Tercius is breaking down rules. He's next. All the universities for people who want to make a difference. People just like you. You're always saying to me to change. Come on, change. Let's do this. Walden University had a course for change. My anxiety became overwhelming, like I need help beyond just meditating or yoga. I've had a particularly hard day, and I was like, I need to do it. And I found her, and I was like, wow, this is pretty incredible. And right away, I got that treatment provider. Everything was completely seamless. In just a couple weeks, I noticed such a huge difference. Medication and her specifically, they all back together. Get started today at 4hers.com.
They're called China's behavior. And some is what you can drink in underwear with a supportive pouch built in. You don't realize you need new underwear. Hey, try these. Love your first pair and they're free. Upgrade to hammock underwear at ChinaZ.com.
When the last time you woke up and felt good?
Like really good.
If that is well, it's time. Or get enough.
low-interest loans to aid in the mechanization of their farms. And now that they have succeeded in becoming successful, they are paid not to farm. And these are the same people who now say to black people whose ancestors were brought to this country in chains and who were emancipated in 1863 without being given land to cultivate or bread to eat, that they must pull themselves up by their own bootstraps. What they truly advocate is socialism for the rich and capitalism for the poor.
One of the things we're talking about, the homeless and all the people coming here to New York and Chicago, without ending the mayors of the city becoming involved. They also be involved.
This level of demand is not sustainable. We need the federal government to more quickly process work authorizations for new arrivals. They want to work. They want to support their families. And we have thousands of open jobs going unfilled here in our state. So we are not waiting any longer. We are connecting as many shelter residents as we can to work opportunities. First, we are working with shelters and employers to help match work-eligible residents with jobs.
The governor of Massachusetts said that the state is currently taking care of 7,000 families. They say they cannot house more than 7,500 families, and officials there expect that that number will be reached by the end of this month. In New York City, I'm Axel Tercius, Scripps News.
Thanks, well, thank you very much. Still ahead, hospitals in Gaza at a race against time, struggling to keep the lights on, scrambling for medical supplies, and trying to treat the wounded. A Chicago area nonprofit saying that they plan to come to the rescue. Inside the U.S. Capitol complex, their demands end the Israel-Hamas war. Stories from Capitol Hill is next. And for the audience leaving us right now, your local programming is next. But you can find out where to keep watching at scriptsnews.com/TV. If you're on Medicare, remember,
the end of our nation's might. Seven times the war times of reactions throughout the society. But I suspect that we are now experiencing the coming to the surface of a triple-pronged sickness that has been lurking within our body politic from its very beginning. That is the sickness of racism, excessive materialism, and militarism. Not only is this our nation's dilemma, it is the plague of Western civilization. As early as 1906, W.E.B. Du Bois prophesied that the problem of the 20th century will be the problem of the color line. Now, as we stand two-thirds into this crucial period of history, we know full well that racism is still that hound of hell which dogs the tracks of our civilization. Ever since the birth of our nation, white America has had a schizophrenic personality on the question of race. She has been torn between selves, a self in which she proudly professed the great principles of democracy, and a self in which she madly practiced the antithesis of democracy. This tragic duality has produced a strange indecisiveness and ambivalence toward the Negro, causing America to take a step backward simultaneously with every step forward on the question of racial justice. To be at once attracted to the Negro and repelled by him, to love and to hate him. There has never been a solid, unified, and determined thrust to make justice a reality for Afro-Americans. The step backwards has a new name today. It is called the white backlash. But the white backlash is nothing new. It is the surfacing of old prejudices, hostilities, and ambivalences that have always been there. It was caused neither by the cry of black power, nor by the unfortunate recent wave of riots in our cities. The white backlash of today is rooted in the same problem that has characterized America ever since the black man landed in chains on the shores of this nation. This does not imply that all white Americans are racist. Far from it. Many white people have, through a deep moral compulsion, fought long and hard for racial justice. Nor does it mean that America has made no progress in her attempt to cure the body politic of the disease of racism, or that the dogma of racism has not been considerably modified in recent years. However, for the good of America, it is necessary to refute the idea that the dominant ideology in our country, even today, is freedom and equality, while racism is just an occasional departure from the norm on the part of a few bigoted extremists. Racism can well be that corrosive evil that will bring down the curtain on Western civilization. Arnold Toynbee has said that some 26 civilizations have risen upon the face of the earth. Almost all of them have descended into the junk heaps of destruction. The decline and fall of these civilizations, according to Toynbee, was not caused by external invasions, but by internal decay. They failed to respond creatively to the challenges impinging upon them. If America does not respond creatively to the challenge to banish racism, some future historian will have to say that a great civilization died because it lacked the soul and commitment to make justice a reality for all men. Second aspect of our afflicted society is extreme materialism. An Asian writer has portrayed our dilemma in candid terms. He says, you call your 1,000 material devices labor-saving machinery, yet you are forever busy with the multiplying of your machinery. You grow increasingly fatigued, anxious, nervous, dissatisfied. Whatever you have, you want more. Wherever you are, you want to go somewhere else. Your devices are neither time-saving nor soul-saving machinery. They are so many sharp spurs which urge you on to invent more machinery and to do more business. This tells us something about our civilization that cannot be cast aside as a prejudice charge by an Eastern thinker who is jealous of Western prosperity. We cannot escape the indictment. This does not mean that we must turn back the clock of scientific progress. No one can overlook the wonders that science has wrought for our lives. The automobile will not abdicate in favor of the horse and buggy, of the train in favor of the stagecoach, of the tractor in favor of the hand plow, of the scientific method in favor of ignorance and superstition. But our moral lag must be redeemed. When scientific power outruns moral power, we end up with guided missiles and misguided men. When we foolishly maximize the minimum and minimize the maximum, we sign the warrant for our own day of doom. It is this moral lag in our thing-oriented society that blinds us to the human realities around us, encourages us in the greed and exploitation which creates the sector of poverty in the midst of wealth. Again, we have deluded ourselves into believing the myth that capitalism grew and prospered out of the Protestant ethic of hard work and sacrifice. The fact is that capitalism was built on the exploitation and suffering of black slaves. And continues to thrive on the exploitation of the poor, both black and white, both here and abroad. If Negroes and poor whites do not participate in the free flow of wealth within our economy, they will forever be poor, giving their energy, their talents, and their limited funds to the consumer market, but reaping few benefits and services in return. The way to end poverty is to end the exploitation of the poor, ensure them a fair share of the government services and the nation's resources. I proposed recently that a national agency be established to provide employment for everyone needing it. Nothing is more socially inexcusable than unemployment in this age. In the 30s, when the nation was bankrupt, it instituted such an agency, the WPA. In the present conditions of a nation glutted with resources, it is barbarous to condemn people desiring work for soul-sapping inactivity and poverty. I am convinced that even this one massive act of concern would do more than all the state police and armies of the nation to quell riots and steal hatreds. The tragedy is that our materialistic culture does not possess the statesmanship necessary to do it. Victor Hugo could have been thinking of 20th century America when he wrote, "There's always more misery among the lower classes than there is humanity in the higher classes." The time has come for America to face the inevitable choice between materialism and humanism. We must devote at least as much to our children's education and the health of the poor as we do to the care of our automobiles and the building of beautiful, impressive hotels. We must also realize that the problems of racial injustice and economic injustice cannot be solved without a radical redistribution of political and economic power. We must further recognize that the ghetto is a domestic colony. Black people must develop programs that will aid in the transfer of power and wealth into the hands of residents of the ghetto so that they may in reality control their own destiny. This is the meaning of new politics. people of goodwill in the larger community.
If you're a small business owner, let's talk about big benefits for small business. A health care plan.
And every now and then we get in jail and we see the jailer looking through the windows, being moved by our prayer and being moved by our words and our song. There was a power there which Bull Connor couldn't adjust to. So we ended up transforming Bull into a steel, and we...
Well, is it going to help we're not going to be facing this situation alone? Like, continuing that, you know, from my country and Congress, there's been very good bipartisan support, outstanding support. Israel, and of course, many also would like to see humanitarian support in Gaza. And looking over a lot of misinformation, internet, and Hamas's book, they can tell the truth. Don't expect him to tell the truth.
Well, I'll make you a deal. I'll make you a deal. You can come back here on this broadcast anytime, and we'll try and straighten him out. How's that sound?
Well, maybe you can straighten me up, but I don't think you can straighten him out. But listen, Jay, thank you for your time.
You got it. Congressman Law is great. Well, thanks very much. A nonprofit organization from Chicago sending truckloads of medical supplies to Gaza. One of their members is in close contact with doctors on the ground there. The situation for them and their patients, they say, is dire. Here's our national correspondent, Benjamin Miso.
Dr. Fair Ahmad is a volunteer and board member at MedGlobal, an organization that provides medical aid to vulnerable populations worldwide, including Gaza.
We're doing daily meals for the healthcare workers at the various hospitals.
To 500 daily meals delivered, because these are people who are working around the clock. There is no off time, there is no lunch break, there is nothing that they're able to, they're not able to go home. Since the latest conflict began, the Chicago area nonprofits has raised hundreds of thousands of dollars for humanitarian aid in Gaza and has delivered over 60,000 liters of fuel to 11 hospitals across the Gaza Strip to keep the lights on. It also has truckloads of medical supplies ready to cross into Gaza.
We want the doctors to be equipped to be able to do surgery on people who have injuries from the trauma. We want the doctors to be able to give antibiotics to people who have infections ravaging their body.
Ahmad has five MedGlobal friends and colleagues in Gaza City. He says that their hospital has been treating dozens of injured people after an explosion at another nearby hospital.
What they're describing are people on the side of the building, on the floor, agonizing, in pain, wounded.
They're asking for us to think of them to pray. He communicates daily with his colleagues on Zoom and WhatsApp, who say they are overworked. They tell him they are beyond exhausted and forced to make extremely difficult choices with the bare supplies they have.
So when I talk about supplies and medical supplies, what you see is they often have to reuse it. They don't have pain medicine to give to the kids, and they are trying to heal their wounds and treat their burns.
Ahmad has gone to Gaza on medical missions multiple times since he tried his best to help and comfort his colleagues, but he also feels guilty being so far away.
There's this incredible amount of survivor's guilt that you know that your people are suffering, that they are not having any sort of peace, and that there are bombs being dropped on their heads. And at the end of the day, I'm going to go outside, get into my car, and go home and be very safe.
Ben Shamiso, Scripps News, Oaklawn, Illinois. Still ahead, gunfights gripping the United States with shootings claiming the lives of thousands of Americans every year. We'll talk about some of the ways that experts are saying these shootings can be prevented, including a look at the drills that they say are the most effective. Stick with us.
There's different ways to deal with the violence that's going on in our country. Black on black crime, and the community is full of people sleeping outside at the police station, and police on alert, high
alert right now. So one of the things happening is that we must come together. If we don't come together, as human beings, we would destroy each other. Right now, we're on the road of hate, jealousy, envy. And it's not just in Chicago. It's all over America. You can smell the hate in the air. You smell the evil that has messed with the mind of our children. And then in the Bible story, Psalms 109, and Exodus 14:14, be sure to let God fight your battle. Psalms 98 and Psalms 91. And I want you to read Psalm 56. I want you to understand we got floods back to back, tornadoes back to back. Just had an earthquake over in California. And we had an earthquake in Italy, and I think about a week ago, we've been having storms in different places because man has turned his back away from God. Don't you let nobody take you away from the Creator. Because evil men and women because of greed to tell you anything. But the wages of sin is death. Gift of God eternal life. I'm praying for everyone who lost a loved one in Chicago, over in the Middle East, in Alabama. Praying for the young man so the Jackson State was shot. Pray to catch the one that shot him and be prosecuted. We have to stop the killing to save the baby. That's one of the things that we got to do. Going into 2024, and we have to be able to embrace one another as sister and brother. Not as color your skin. Not none of that. We're talking about him that faces the power of God and all these guns and killing got to stop.
Mass shootings so far this year, 3,400 people have died, more than 1,900 by suicide, and the year is not yet over. Today, experts holding a panel on gun violence and school shootings in an effort to try and save lives. Cubs News national correspondent Adam Barhart joins us live from Phoenix, and Adam, what were the big takeaways?
Well, Bill, there was a panel of university professors really focused on gun violence when it comes to communities and in schools, K through 12. They really discussed the effectiveness of lockdown training and drill when it comes to students' mental health and staff mental health in schools. They also talked about strategies to help reduce and prevent gun violence, not just in schools, but also in communities, and how it's all a collaborative effort. Data presented during this panel shows that gun violence continues to persist and is now the leading cause of death among children in the U.S., adding that exposure to this trauma can impact the development of children and teens. Gun violence includes mass shootings, unintentional shootings, and suicide. Now, each year, 100,000 Americans are injured with a firearm, and more than 40,000 die as a result. Data show that school gun violence ticked up in 2015 and again in 2021. A Columbia University professor, Dr. Sonali Rajan, and colleagues found that states with higher rates of gun ownership and looser gun laws were more likely to experience active shootings and shootings in K-12 schools. Experts say the current approach to gun violence crisis in schools needs to focus on prevention instead of reaction and must be strategic and multifaceted, adding that collaboration and cooperation is a key element. Training absolutely has to include everybody, and then the drills themselves do do as well. Some of our cafeteria workers and janitors and others actually have the more challenging jobs because, you know, finding the places to go and to get behind a locked door when you're in a more open space are really critical. Now, she says that her research shows evidence that these lockdown rules help students feel safer, helps reduce anxiety, and helps save lives in real-time events by as much as 63%. Now, one common theme around this panel is that there is no one solution when it comes to gun violence. It's really a collaborative effort between the community, federal, state, and even the school policy. Now,
Liberator Force Live in Phoenix, that is always. We thank you very much. Still have high inflation, high price tags, not keeping Americans from spending big. Now, this endless spending spree we seem to be on affects the overall economy and your personal savings. And also bad news for Netflix subscribers, the streaming service raising prices again.
Pet insurance plans help pet parents focus on moments that matter and worry less about unexpected debt bills. So puppyhood and
we got to have a new way to deal with the guns that's going on, the selling of assault rifles over and over in our country. And nobody's really saying how to deal with the guns that go on every day in our community. Somebody got to be able to speak to the gun crisis that's taking place every day in our life. And we must learn to fight or to understand some of the stuff that's going on in our daily life. Just go out to all those that are listening tonight. They lost loved ones, Arkansas, Mississippi, Louisiana. The storm
Thank you. Well-worthy gifts for all budgets. Etsy has gifts. Shop now.